Welcome to the Frequency 49 show. I'm Paul MacDonald alongside Gary Rutledge and Deepak Gohill. Hey, guys.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Hey, Paul.
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, I've had better weeks. Staying up till 5 a.m. to watch that display wasn't the best use of my time. But, we'll rip it apart and try and look forward to something positive.
There's definitely plenty to discuss, isn't there?
Yeah, I'm optimistic. We can still be 11-5. We'll be fine.
Right. Brian's not available this week. He's helping police with their inquiries into an incident involving a space hopper and a lime green mankini. Who knew? So instead, okay. We've got our very first guest host. Welcome to the show, Stuart Whittaker. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, Paul. Hi, everyone.
Great to have you with us on the show today.
Thanks very much. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Stuart. It's really good to have you with us.
No problem. There's a lot to talk about.
There is. We've had a hell of a lot of feedback through the Facebook group this week from everybody wanting to give their opinions and wanting questions asked as well of the show. Should we get straight into it?
Yeah, let's just dive straight into it.
Yeah, let's go.
Into the deep end, right. Who wants to say what first? Because where do you start?
142 yards of offense.
Half-empty stadium.
Appalling defense.
Was it 8 first downs for the entire game?
Yeah, 8 first downs, but 9 punts.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely ridiculous.
3 points. And the reason why I say 3 points is if you look at it on paper, it's not an impotent offense by any stretch. There's some decent ballers out there, you know, and this team is punching way below its weight because despite the exodus, there's still some pretty good quality talent in that roster.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think. I mean, when you think about it, it reminds me a bit of the Singletary days when there was, like, I think that was quite the frustration at the time because it wasn't a team devoid of talent. You had, like, Vernon Davis there and good players, yes. And there's still, yes, good players existing on the roster, but there's no production.
No, and I think to dissect that, well, let's do it then, shall we, guys?
Yeah, as you said, 142 yards total offense. Who do we put that down to? You know, we try to find somebody to blame for this. Is there any one person to blame for this? Is it all on Kaepernick? Or is it that the entire team have to take responsibility for this?
Yeah, I think the whole team's got to take the blame for it. It's easy to point fingers at Cap and say that, you know, it's him that's causing the problems, but I don't think that's true at all. I mean, getting sacked 6 times, and I think Cap now is the most... Russell Wilson's the most sacked quarterback, but Cap's not far behind. But the offensive line just doesn't seem to be giving him the time, and that's just making him panic. And, you know, the fact that Cap didn't even rush during the game, you know, is something... First time in his career, that's something that... There is something wrong there that means that he's just so scared, you know, of everything, that it's causing major problems.
That was one thing that sort of stood out to me as well, that there was no seem to be even designed runs for Kaepernick, and that's something that's worked against Seattle before.
Yeah, I mean, okay, the offensive line thing, and I know everyone's got an opinion. Mine is, okay, let's just give that a rest now because it's a really easy out for everything. I think the problem, if you look at Seattle, their offensive line is actually worse than ours, but they have personnel in place that can extend a play and do improvisation. So we don't have somebody who has the skill set to be able to do that. But if we're looking at just 142 total yards of offense, it's not any one thing. So it's not just the offensive line. It's not just the quarterback. It's not just the receiving core. I think when you've got something that's very, very bad, it's because all the components that make it up are also very, very bad. And it's not just very, very bad in terms of execution and delivery. It's bad in terms of motivation, and I think that might be a really big marker is the motivation of the players to actually want to produce, to want to execute. And we saw flashes of Vernon Davis, and because he's been virtually unheard of and unseen for the last 2 seasons, people are thinking, are we finally giving him the ball to increase his trade value from a 7th round to a 6th round pick? You know, there's a lot of conspiracies going out as to how come Vernon became active all of a sudden and made a couple of passes. Caught a couple of passes, sorry. So there's a lot of fingers.
Well, they also went away from what had worked sort of in the previous games, like starting with the short passes. I mean, what happened to Bruce Miller? Bruce Miller on Sunday, was it 3 for 89? He wasn't even targeted.
Yeah, but Gary, we were actually playing a terrible, terrible team. Baltimore are not a good, great team. And to be fair, neither is Seattle. So something else has happened, you know. And I agree with you that that high percentage game really worked for us, because when you build up playing high percentage football, it improves the confidence of your quarterback and everything else sort of falls into place. But we just, I think it was 7-3 and outs that we went. I can't remember now. But every drive was a 3-and-out, wasn't it? Every single one.
But I think they've just totally moved away from basics. I mean, after the performance against the Ravens, and I know they're a much weaker team, you know, we were saying how good it was to see Cap taking snaps under centre, not always going to the shotgun formation. And this time it seems to be, I guess it was more balanced. It was probably about half and half, but it just seemed to be going back to the default, let's go back to shotgun because it's worked years ago, rather than we've made progress the last couple of weeks. Let's just try and stick to that and see how it plays out.
I agree, Gary, because if the last game against Baltimore, you know, when he was under centre, he was actually selling a really good play action fake, and that led to a couple of really decent gains. In the Seattle game, there was one instance where he faked a play action fake to no one. There was no running back that he actually faked the handoff to. It was just weird how a bread and butter play that's quite high percentage could fail so spectacularly.
James Waters has asked, isn't it about time Kaepernick was benched? We've toyed with this question for a while, haven't we? And given that the backup is Blaine Gabbert. But at some point, do we have to say, enough is enough, bench Kaepernick, sit him down, let him get his head straight while somebody else takes over for one game, two games, whatever. Is that time now?
There's no wrong answer and no right answer, okay? It depends on what the team's objectives are going to be for the rest of the season. And I think it's fairly safe to say that we're not going to be playoff contenders. And then you have to look at Blaine Gabbert himself and think, is he a potential starter for this football team? You know, can he lead an offense? Can he be productive as a quarterback? And perhaps not. So the argument is moot. It doesn't really matter which one you play, because we don't have a roadmap in place of where we want to be in next season or the season after. If we did, what we would have had in the first instance was Kaepernick learn the trade, do his time as a backup, and then compete for the starting job instead of cashing in on somebody getting a concussion, Alex Smith. I think, we can play Blaine Gabbert, absolutely. But it's not going to gain anything more than playing Kaepernick. It would make no difference. And then, me being cynical, Colin Kaepernick sells. He sells shirts. He sells tickets. You know, Blaine Gabbert does not. People don't pay money to watch Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is a rebuilding season. And there's no point, you know, we're now sitting at 2-5. Blaine Gabbert's not going to turn it around and, you know, win every game for us. So there's no point sort of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, I think. I think we've got a few tough games coming up. We need to just continue trying to rebuild and looking forward to next season. And whether, you know, Kaepernick's the future long term, or someone like Jared Goff, getting him in the draft would be the future. We need to stick with a team that, you know, is capable of delivering us something in a year or 2 years' time.
That's a really interesting point, Gary, because the way I see it, you know, we could draft a stud QB in the college draft. But if you look at Alex Smith, look at Colin Kaepernick, both of them decent quarterbacks that have gone by the wayside because of mismanagement and poor coaching. So if we were to draft another stud QB, wouldn't the same thing happen again, because there's no consistency with the direction of the team? And that sort of makes me believe that, okay, officially we're reloading, so we're better than we were the year before. We all know that it's actually a rebuild, but now I'm even questioning whether it's a rebuild or not. I think it's a reconstruction is needed, not a rebuild.
Well, Gavin Sutton's asked a question related to that, particularly the phrase rebuilding year. Do we think that one rebuilding year is enough, or is next year going to be another rebuilding year?
Stu, what do you think?
Well, I think it's dependent on, I mean, you can sort of transform a team with a good draft and a good free agency. we've seen it before. But I mean, I'm a bit resigned. I'm not 100% sure that Trent Baalke is the man to do that at the moment. Sorry, slightly away from the question, but I mean, yeah, I mean, with this team at the moment, I'd say it's multiple rebuilding years. I've also seen like some post people saying that there's a lot of young talent on the team, and I'm a bit concerned about that as well, because the supposedly young talent, it never seems to get, I mean, it's been historic for the last few years as well, but it never seems to get the opportunity to have a chance. And then there's also the option, the fact they might not even be that good in the first place.
Those are great points, and you're right about the young talent thing, because Baalke's had free rein with drafting who he wants to, and the number of players that are coming into maturity have been quite disappointing. But Gavin's question is really difficult to answer. How long does a rebuild take? You know, if you look at it, you know, in a black and white perspective, we've got a decent depth of talent. Not depth, but we've got talent on the team, so that's always good to help you win a few football games and develop second line, second string, third string players, okay? But you can't really rebuild with that under the current direction of the club. And that, to me, you know, is something that's happening at the very highest levels of the club, because nobody really knows which direction they're going in. And just like Singletary, through no fault of his own, Tom Sula is over his head with this, because he doesn't know which direction this club wants to go. And there's not a roadmap in place to make that happen. So this rebuild should actually be a reconstruction. A start from the ground up, including the very highest levels of management, which we know is not going to change. So are we going to go from like Nolan, Ericsson, Singletary and do the rounds again? Or are we going to find one quality coach, keep him, and that person who's got a direction and a vision, I'm not saying John Gruden here, but somebody like him could develop this team, and then that's when the true rebuild will happen.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a couple of quick points there. I think one problem you do have with that at the moment is with the current ownership, who's going to really want to come in, seeing what's happened to Jim Harbour, and who's going to want to work for the Yorks? I mean, that's like to get the higher top-level person. And, sorry, just one
that's
other point.
That's also true for players.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, but I suppose money talks up to a bit with regard to players for me.
Well, it does in the modern game. Historically, players would go where they're likely to win something. Now, it is more about money. But let's face it, if you were touted highly in a college draft, or if you're a free agent, why would you come to Santa Clara? Why would you even want to go there? There's no incentive. They're not winning things. There's a lot of discord, a lot of turmoil. So it's unattractive, not just for a coach, but for players. So how do you then rebuild? You've got to rebuild with what you've got, and what you've got is not motivated. So it's such a difficult question to answer.
It is. There's one quick point I just want to make as well. Like, I think there's a lot of similarities between Singletary and Tom Sula in the fact that they are both... Singletary was a great assistant head coach, great motivator. Tom Sula was no doubt a great defensive line coach, but they've made this step up to head coach. And I mean, to be honest, the jury's out for Tom Sula. Obviously, Singletary wasn't good. But then you're back in that cycle of wasting a couple of years, probably similarly like talented teams, but like you say, without that real clear sort of difference maker at the top.
Yeah, I mean, and the damage to the club is not just the performance on the field, it'll affect them commercially and in lots of other ways, financially too, you know, and that's really where you hurt a National Football League team is financially, because at the end of the day, only one team can win a Super Bowl. And I think for 49er fans, the hard reality is, and I'm going to be a little bit controversial, but we are quite whiny. I think we've developed a sense of entitlement that why should our team ever be awful? Why should we suck? You know, Indianapolis sucks. Cleveland sucks. We're not one of those teams. But the truth of the matter is, apart from three seasons, in the last 12 seasons, that's all we have done is suck. You know, and we need to accept that.
Matt Maiocco has recently reported in the last 24 hours or so that there are rumours of big changes going on. Now, Tom Sula's come out and said it's not going to be the coaching staff, it's not going to be the quarterback, which kind of confirms there are going to be big changes somewhere. Mark Harrison wants to know, what do we think those big changes are going to be?
Move back to Candlestick.
I was expecting that one. We'll scratch out a gridiron in the car park there and just play there.
Or they might as well just be done with it and move to Los Angeles. Big changes. Well, if it's not coaching and it's not quarterback, then obviously it's not really a big change, is it? Because those are two massive components of what's wrong. So if it's not one of those two, can anybody think what the next priority component would be? Change of ownership? No, well, that's not going to happen. Maybe they're going to have a stadium sharing announcement or something commercial, because if it's not coaching and it's not player personnel and it's not front office change, then how's that going to help the team?
I don't think he's necessarily said it's player personnel. We've got to expect that with Tom Sula coming out and talking about it, it's going to be changes on the field. But he's actually stated that it's not going to be Kaepernick. Could we see a 60%, 80% new O-line maybe?
But it's where do we get these players from? We haven't got quality players sitting around that we're not playing and going, we'll wait to play them till week 8 and see what happens. So
hang on, guys. Wait a second. In the context of that question, right? If we're making adjustments to player personnel, why is that a big announcement? Shouldn't that be what we do when things aren't going wrong? We deploy the right personnel. The way this thing has been put about on the internet, a big announcement, it's almost as if a landmark change is going to happen. So replacing an offensive lineman with another one isn't really a landmark change. I hope to God that we can get a half-decent O-line. But if it's a big, big change, I think anybody's guess is as good as anybody else's what it could be. It may even well be a coaching change. Tom Sula is a very... he's a trusting guy. They may have told him, look, you guys are safe. Do you remember when Alex Smith got a concussion and Kaepernick took over from him, had a great game and everything? The next press conference, what did Jim Harbaugh say? He said, Alex Smith is my quarterback and so is Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
So they both thought they were going to be in with a shout. Yeah. So you don't really know, even if JT's gone ahead and said there's not going to be a coaching change, that doesn't mean anything. Or even a QB change. Doesn't mean anything.
I think personally that the big announcement is going to be that from now on the defense is going to play offense and the offense is going to play defense, and we'll see how that works.
Yeah, I could see Bowman at I could see Bowman at quarterback.
could you imagine that?
I could see Kapp as a wide receiver. Oh no, sorry, Kapp would be a cornerback, wouldn't he? He'd make a good corner. He's got the speed. He's got the size.
Should we take a look at the injuries? Because. Semi-controversial injuries. Carlos Hyde supposedly playing with a stress fracture in his foot. Was that a good idea?
Well, Tom Sula's come out and said it's not something that's going to get worse, and I think Carlos Hyde's backed that up. But, stress fracture doesn't sound good. And he was certainly, restricted in what he did. They tried to get Reggie Bush involved in, a few more of the running plays. And my concern is, do we let him play on with the risk of... There's always a risk of making it worse. But, we're with a losing team. Is there any benefit to, potentially putting this player out for a season or the rest of his career?
I personally think it's reprehensible to put somebody who's got a broken foot to play as an NFL running back. And here's the reasons why I think that they're playing him. So he's first string. Okay, Carlos Hyde. Stud running back. Excellent football player. Second is Reggie Bush, who might play or might not play. And really, the third option is our Australian friend, Jared Hayne, who, if he gets tackled from behind, is going to fumble the football. So, as a coach, you choose which of those three you'd rather have. And most people would probably pick somebody with a broken foot. Doesn't say much about our team.
Don't forget, there is Mike Davis there as well. And, we've seen him coming a little bit. And I think he's probably above, further up the pecking order than Hayne is. But I think that goes back to what we're saying about playing the young talent.
Yeah, but if you don't play them, Gary, then you don't know how good they could be. And this is the perfect opportunity to blood the young talent. We're not going to make the playoffs. We're not.
And that, I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier about the young talent. But it doesn't seem to get a chance over the years. I think one thing with regard to the running back position, I'm not sure on his fitness, but when they sort of waived Kendall Hunt, didn't they, just before the season? But there was some kind of issue with the way they'd done it and that they couldn't re-sign him.
That's right.
Which may have proved quite useful if he is sort of getting back to fitness.
Right. We've also lost Antoine Bethea with a torn pec muscle for what looks like the season. He's been placed on IR. How big a loss is that?
I think it's very significant. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, go for it. Okay.
Yeah, no, I think it's very significant. I think we touched on it before, but he's like one of the only real sort of quality defensive backs we have, a consistent performer. I mean, the rest, like we say, I mean, I suppose they're quite young and inexperienced, but Bethea's been there. He's won the Super Bowl.
I agree.
Yeah, I think he's good for Reed as well to have him next to him back there. And now I suppose they're going to go for Tart, which, again, I think he's shown glimpses that he could be a good player. So I suppose at least there's someone there to bring in and sort of give him a chance. But, yeah, I think it's a massive loss overall.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think not just from an experience point of view, from a sort of character point of view. I listened to an interview there at Reed the other day, and he was saying that, you know, Bethea is such a character and such a leader on that defence in the secondary that, they're going to miss him so much. And we haven't got the experience to people step up. You know, when you think that Eric Reed's, I think, the second oldest behind Brock now, that's, you know, shows the lack of depth we've got there.
It's another, like, experienced player lost with all the others we lost this off-season.
That,
and as well as, sorry, I just want to add, as well as his ability to play safety position, you know, and he's a good safety, his leadership is also really, really important because he's playing in a unit that doesn't really have any leadership. It's just him and Bowman that are taking care of that defense. So you're taking out a leader as well. So it hurts us not just in terms of the performance on the field, but in terms of motivating his colleagues as well. It is a huge loss. Huge loss for us.
Well, with Bethea moving to the IR, it's opened up another spot on the 53-man roster, which has been filled by Jerome Simpson. What can he bring?
I honestly don't know. I mean, we're not short of weapons. We've got such good weapons in, you know, with Smith, Bolden, you know, Vernon, Bruce Miller got involved with the week. You know, there's weapons there. So it's not a case of, oh, we've been missing a good wide receiver. That's going to solve all our problems. And I'm not sure whether Simpson's going to have an impact, you know, for the rest of the season, really.
Nailed it, Gary.
Yeah. I mean, is he any better than what they've already got as well? You know, sort of Patton, Ellington, is he any better than those? Can he add much more than those? And like you say, it's all right having all these weapons, but you've got to be able to utilise them and put them in position to win, which they're not currently doing.
Right. Should we take a short change of pace? And we're going to look at a new feature that we've got on the show called the Pick Six Challenge. This was started actually by Deepak, wasn't it, Deepak? You came up with the idea for it.
It's just my idea, yeah. I don't take ownership of that, but I just thought it might be something a little bit punchy, a little bit different, you know?
Yeah, well, if it goes really badly, it was your fault.
Fine.
No pressure, Deepak. The future of the show hangs on you.
That's it.
But what would make this fun is if people actually, you know, had a go predicting the same six as we do. And see how we all scratch up, you know, because we are not the font of all football knowledge by any stretch.
As everyone's about to find out.
Yeah, that's right.
For those of you listening after Sunday, then yeah, you know how bad we are.
This could be a whole lot of fun, but we'll give it a go anyway. So what we've done is, throughout the last few days, the group have voted on the six games they want us to do our picks on. And I've got a list of them here. I've done them in time order as well for the times that they start. And the first game that they want us to pick our winners and losers on is the International Series game.
This is London, baby.
It's the Bills at the Jags in Wembley, the International Series game. Who's your winners and losers in that one, guys?
I'd love to say the Jags, but unfortunately I can't see it. And I think the Bills, having seen the Bills defeat play really well this season, I think I'm going to have to go with the Bills.
Okay, Deepak?
Yeah, I think Buffalo will take care of business against the Florida 49ers. So, yeah, Buffalo to win that one.
Oh, I love it. The Florida 49ers, brilliant. Stuart, what about you?
Yeah, I have to make it 3 out of 3. I can't see Jacksonville troubling Buffalo too much, despite Buffalo's injuries. I think they'll be too good.
I'm going to book the trend. I'm going to go with the upset on this one. I think the Jags are going to do this. I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game, and I don't think it's going to be a very good game, but I can see the Jags actually pulling out a win in this one at Wembley.
And we can watch it live on the internet by Yahoo. So there we go.
And BBC Two. It's on BBC Two as well, I believe.
Sky Sports and BBC Two. Excellent. So, you've got a choice.
Yeah, there's no excuse to miss this game at all, Lenny.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, the second game that they want us to bring our views on is a divisional game, Browns at Rams. So it's one of importance to us. Who have you got in that one, Stuart?
I'm going for the Rams. I just think that Gurley's going to have a big game tomorrow. He's going to run all over the Browns' defense. Although, he's with a bit of trepidation, given that the Rams tend to play down to people. They're good against the NFC West, but seem to struggle against everyone else. But they've had a bye week to prepare, so I'm going with the Rams.
And Gary?
Yeah, I was going to say exactly the same. They do seem to bring their A game when they're playing the rest of the NFC West and then a hit and miss against the teams. But, yeah, Gurley's, had a breakout first year and I think he's going to be unstoppable against the Browns.
Deepak, what's your thought?
I'm a little bit torn over this, okay? I mean, St. Louis are overwhelming favourites. I have a bit of a soft spot for Cleveland. And they pushed Denver really hard last week. Really, really hard. But I think the Rams have probably got too much. And also the Rams are playing at home, so I think they'll just squeak it.
I think it's a sweep then for the Rams, because that's who I'm picking to win that one at 6 o'clock. On to the 9 o'clock games, Raiders at Chargers. And we'll go with Deepak first.
Oh, okay, so it's in San Diego. Do you know what? I'm going to go for the Raiders, because I think they're going to be a legit playoff team next year. And they're doing some good stuff. And they're going to win games this season. With San Diego, you just don't know from one week to the next what you're going to get. And I think this might be an upset. I'm going with the Raiders.
Okay, Gary?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Deepak there. I think San Diego are on a downward spiral, and the Raiders, as much as I hate to say it, are on an upward spiral. So, yeah, I think the Raiders are going to pull off a win here.
Stuart, what's your thoughts, mate?
I'm going to go with the Chargers at home. I think offensively they might have a bit too much for the Raiders tomorrow. I mean, Philip Rivers is on an amazing sort of record pace. So I think they might continue tomorrow. They might just have a bit too much for the Raiders at home.
Okay, I think on balance I'm going to have to go with the Raiders on that one. So it's 3 for the Raiders, 1 for the Chargers. On to the next game, 9:25, Cowboys at Giants. Big rivalry there. Gary?
I think I'm going to just give the Giants the edge. I think the Cowboys missing Romo, and it's rumours Dez Bryant might be back, but I think that they're going to. I think the Giants are going to win that. I just think at home they're just going to be a little bit too strong for the Cowboys.
And Stuart?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Giants as well. What's interesting in this one is that the home teams in the NFC East games have a terrible record actually, but I just can't back a Brandon Whedon or a Matt Cassel-led Cowboys against the Giants. So I'll go with the Giants.
And Deepak?
Yeah, well said, Stuart. I agree. I think the other way you've got to look at these games, the rivalry games. So the one we just talked about, San Diego and the Raiders, these are like big rivalry games. I think with New York being at home, the fans are going to be up for it. Dallas without Romo, maybe without Dez Bryant, who knows. But I think the Giants will win this.
That'll be a sweep for the Giants then. I can't see the Cowboys going in there and getting a win without Romo, more than likely without Dez Bryant. I can actually see this being an absolute pounding by the Giants on the Cowboys. Moving on to the Sunday night football game then. They picked a decent raft of games, haven't they, for us to go through. Eagles at Panthers Sunday night. Who's your winners with that one? Let's go with Stuart first.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the Panthers. I think they're legit. I think they've got good defense. Cam Newton's playing really well, and the Eagles are inconsistent. And I mean, Bradford's a bit of a turnover machine, so I'll go with the Panthers.
And Deepak?
Yeah, I'm going with Carolina too, purely because I had high hopes for Philadelphia this season. But just like San Diego, you just don't know what you're going to get from one game to the next. And I also think that Cam Newton will be the difference that makes the difference. I'm going with Carolina.
And Gary?
Yeah, I'm going to pick the Panthers too. As everyone said, I don't think it's working in Philadelphia. I think people have caught on to Chip Kelly's hyper-speed offense, and it just seems a little bit jumbled there. And the Panthers looking really strong, great defense, and see them going 7-0.
Can't add anything to that myself. Panthers as well. Like you say, I think people have just got onto Chip Kelly now, and his experiment there in Philadelphia isn't working. The last one they've got us to pick, Monday Night Football, Ravens at Cardinals. Deepak.
Easy. Arizona by a mile. They're strong. They're legitimate Super Bowl contenders, not just divisional contenders. They've got a real shout of making it all the way. Baltimore, look, we took care of them without breaking too much sweat. Arizona just swatted us away as if we were nothing. This is going to be an easy win for Arizona.
And Stuart?
Yeah, definitely the Cardinals. I mean, if the 49ers passing attack look good against Ravens, what's the Arizona going to do? So, yeah, definitely the Cardinals.
And Gary?
Yeah, exactly the same as the guys. You know, you like to say there is any given Sunday in the NFL, but Arizona at home, and after what we managed to do to Baltimore, I think the Cardinals are just going to go wild.
Yeah, there's no way you can look past Arizona on this one. Monday Night Football, prime time. As you say, if we were able to take on the Ravens and beat them, the Cardinals are going to have absolutely no problem with them at all. So that is our first series of Pick Six Challenge. If you want to get involved, cool. Guys, we'll go on.
I just wanted to say, you know, one of the picks that we made, right? This is an interesting game. In San Diego against the Raiders, and all of us except Stuart picked the Raiders to win this, right? So San Diego are a 90% favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we've really gone with an underdog here. So that's the one I'll be keeping my eye out for. I think Stuart, yeah, if you played the numbers game, you got that. And you're right about Rivers being on form. But I think 10% chance of Oakland winning is a little bit interesting. That's the one I'll be looking out for.
The thing is that especially with this season, there's always been games every week where it's like, hey, that score doesn't add up. You know, there have been the big upsets. So I suppose, as you say, any given Sunday, anything can happen, can't it?
Too many given Sundays. There's been a lot of anomalies in the results in some of the matches. So, but that one is, I think, of all the ones that have been played that week, and we only picked six of them, that's the one that's going to have my interest, I think, because obviously we don't play. So in the international series game is Buffalo, Jacksonville. I hint. Okay, fine. But that's the game that I would probably have the most interest in as a neutral.
Well, that's our picks for the Pick Six Challenge. If you want to get involved, we will be putting those games up on the Facebook page, and you can let us know who you think is going to win. We'll just keep a tally of it and see who's coming out best. And I'm coming out bottom, definitely. I don't think I'll fare too well in that one at all.
You picked the same as all of us, so I think we'll all be joint bottom then.
He picked the Jags, so I think you're right, Paul.
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid there. All right, let's go back to a couple more of the questions before we round out the show with our two-minute drill. David Young got up this morning. I'm guessing he wrote this one yesterday, the question. Got up this morning, something's missing. Why hasn't Jed apologized to the faithful after that unacceptable performance? A couple of people have said the same thing, actually. Where's our apology?
Well, we got one from Tory Smith on Twitter, but, you know, nothing from Jed. And I mean, I've got to sort of buck the trend and say, you know, is it up to the owner to apologise? Shouldn't it be the coaching staff and the players? You know, yeah, we can all, you know, hate Jed for some of the decisions that have been made in the back office. But at the end of the day, it's the players and the coaching staff that are delivering the performance. So it should be them that are apologising.
I've got a take on this because last year, it was 11 months ago, right? When Seattle ate turkey on our 50-yard line at Levi Stadium. That's when Jed issued an apology. And it sort of makes sense now when you have the power of hindsight. That apology was quite clearly a dig at Jim Harbaugh and sowing the seeds of what was going to happen next. So now he hasn't got a bone to pick with the coach. He's not going to throw him under the bus by apologising and undermining his coaching. So that's why I think there's no apology forthcoming. And, you know, it's his toy. He doesn't have to say sorry to anybody. If you don't like it, don't come.
I mean, he also sort of pre-said, when he hired Tom Shula, he said about holding himself accountable, didn't it? If anyway, you've got to hold him accountable if they're not successful. So I thought he sort of dug his own grave a bit with these comments.
He did, and who's advising him to say that? That's what I'd like to know. He must have had somebody say, you need to say this.
Yeah, it was stupid. The tweet last year was stupid, and then saying that before the season was stupid as well.
Yeah.
And like you say, he must be getting bad advice or not thinking before he acts. And what's made it worse, he's just gone into hiding, hasn't he? All you ever see him for on Twitter now is offering free tickets.
Yeah, and he's refused any interviews. He's not doing any interviews with the local media, TV, radio. Yeah, it's his party, and he'll cry if he wants to.
Well, I mean, I think the thing is, this season's gone how everyone expected it to go. As soon as they got rid of Jim Harbour, you know, lost all the players, which obviously is not York's fault. But the hirings they made, it's gone exactly how everyone, so all the pundits, expected it to go. Even though I didn't think the 49ers were as bad as everyone was making them out to be. And for the backlash not to be on York, it had to be work out differently. That's the only way it was going to, and it's happened exactly the wrong way. So that's why there is such a backlash now.
A couple of comments that we had in rather than questions. Mark Lyon, the slogan sevens, not threes, should now be replaced by points and not punts.
Yeah, not a bad shout. Yeah, we've used sevens, not threes for 2-3 seasons. So yeah, why not replace it?
Yeah. And then Mike Gaff, all season there's only been 4 games in which a team hasn't reached 10 first downs or more. The 49ers are responsible for 3 of those games. That's a terrible stat.
Do we know who the other team is, by any chance?
Off the top of my head, I don't. I'm sure with some research we can find who it is. In fact, we shall instruct the people. Guys, go out there and find out who the 4th team was, please, that hasn't reached 10 first downs or more this season.
Would it have been Chicago?
Well, no, it's just...
Well, could have been, actually. Yeah, it could have been.
Because they punted a lot in that game, didn't they?
May well have been. But that basically suggests an inability to move the ball. I know it's stating the obvious, but it means that an offense is so lackluster and devoid of creativity or execution that they just cannot get a first down. Gosh, I can't believe that happened to us. That's a good spot by Mike Graff. Give him his juice for that.
It was. Right. We're coming up to the end of the show again, guys. And that means it's time to wrap it up with the 2-minute drill. Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes, yep. Let's do it.
They were tentative yeses, weren't they? We've even got background music for this one as well. I've been working hard. I've been working hard. So we've got a little bit of background music. 2 minutes to answer as many questions as we can. I just hope we don't run out of questions. Okay, let's go. Is Kaepernick the future, Deepak?
No.
Okay, short and simple. Gary, what position needs upgrading the most?
Sorry, what was that? Sorry.
Gary, which position needs upgrading the most?
Oh, God, so many choices. Yeah, I think quarterback is definitely top of the list.
Okay, Stuart, would Harbaugh have done better with the off-season losses?
Yes.
Okay.
Go
on.
They've just been better coached, better prepared for games for me.
Okay, back to Deepak. Should Tom Tula be replaced?
No.
Okay.
No, because he's been given that coach's job, and I think, you know, he doesn't deserve to be thrown under the bus. And if this is going to help his career in the future, I would like him to have had one complete season in the NFL to add to his CV than being thrown out halfway through it. So not this season, but it's not his fault, you know. He's been put in a position that wasn't his. He didn't ask for this.
Okay, Gary, what record will we finish on this season now?
Oh, wow. I think 11 losses, so 5 wins, I think.
5-11 season. Would you all agree with that now at the moment?
Yeah.
No.
Could you still see 12-4?
Maybe 6.
I'm still sticking with my 3-13.
You're still sticking with 3-13, Deepak. Okay, Stuart, who was the biggest loss in the off-season?
Aside from Jim Harbour, Vic Fangio. Is that acceptable?
That's a good shout, certainly a good shout. And I think Jim Harbaugh is a good shout as well. Back to Gary, can VD be dominant again?
I don't think so. We've said this for a couple of years, and I think he's getting to the stage. You know, he's getting older now. I think he's done, and he's trying to put himself in the shop window for a potential trade.
Okay, we've come to the end of that one. I've got to ask the last one because it was demanded that I ask it for Deepak. Should the 49ers now change back to black uniforms for the rest of the home games?
Okay. If they keep winning, I don't care if they play bareback naked. I really don't care what they play in anymore, as long as they play with some commitment, some passion, and some heart. So if those black duds does it for the boys and makes them want to perform better, then let them wear them, you know.
I just say, yeah. I do not want to see the 49ers play naked. That's a whole different
podcast. Yeah. That's a different podcast, I think.
Yeah. That's an entirely different.
Quite possibly. Right,
just before we end, yep. Congratulations to Stuart. I did look it up, and Seattle against the Chicago Bears. Chicago Bears got 7 first downs, so spot on.
Stuart, you are now our stat attacker.
Sorry if I ruined it for everyone else. Yeah, it just struck me.
That's you didn't ruin it. That's a good find.
Another before we end, can we try and end on a positive? Try and pick, you know, maybe a positive from that performance and look forward, because we have moaned all podcasts, and it'd be nice just to, you know, end on a little bit of positivity.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, mine is Navarro Bowman. I think, you know, we discussed pre-pod that he's not back to what he was, but the guy's, you know, come back from an ACL and an MCL, and he's played 2 games in 4 days and played 62 of 72 snaps against Seattle. So it's great to see him back. And he is, you know, it does take a full year to get back to full speed. But I think he's still the leader of our defense. And it's really great to have him back and getting back to the player that he once was.
Okay, Deepak, have you got a positive from the game?
I have, actually. And actually, this one's going to surprise people who know me well enough. I'm going to go with Colin Kaepernick. For one reason only. The camera panned to the sideline and he was actually studying the gameplay. I've never seen that before. He was actually looking at a Surface tablet and analysing a play with a coach. That gave me great, great heart that this guy actually does want to play for this team as a quarterback. So that's a positive for me.
And Stuart?
Yeah, I think it was, although it was against Seattle, whose offensive line may be worse than ours, but it was good to see some semblance of a pass rush with Lynch and Brooks getting sacks.
Yeah.
Right. Well, there we are. We've found a positive to end this episode on, because that is it for the episode now. Thanks to everyone who's got in touch with your questions and your opinions. You guys, you the listeners, are the people that drive this show. Thanks also to our new writers. We've got writers, guys. Second show in, and we've got writers. Gavin Sutton, Kat Varley-Victorino, who wrote all of our 2-minute drill questions. Thanks very much for that. Thanks also to Audio Nautics for our theme music. It's time to wrap this up, guys. So, got to say, well done to Stuart. Great first show. Absolutely fantastic, mate. And we'd love to have you on again.
Thanks. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, cheers. Cheers, Stuart. Thanks. It was really good having you on, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Stu. Thanks a lot.
Guys, it's time to say goodbye. Deepak, say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Gary.
Goodbye, everybody. And just remember, we're now on SoundCloud, Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere. So no excuse not to listen. Thanks for listening.
But what we're going to do, we're going to put those links up in the Facebook page as well, aren't we? So that people can just click on them and go straight to the links. As we said, Stuart, well done on your great first show. It's been absolutely fantastic having you on. So on behalf of Gary, Deepak and Stuart, I've been Paul McDonald. You've been the audience. This has been the Frequency 49 show. Bye for now.